Southern California has been pounded by wave after wave of drenching storms over the past few months. Reservoirs are filling up, water usage restrictions have been lifted, and the snowpack in the mountains is reaching record levels. Looks like our years-long statewide drought is over. Well, not so fast. Local water agencies warn that this could just be a brief blip in the constant water whiplash here in California. They're still looking for consumers to do some long-term conservation and to find ways of storing more of that precious life-giving liquid. We take a look at the challenges the region still faces.
When we play on the playground, like when we sit on the slide, we get burned.
If you were to walk by campus, you would essentially see a huge long slab of concrete. There's no shade, there's no place for kids to rest.
And here in the Southern California area, we have to come up with innovative ideas to store more water and to battle the effects of climate change. The Trust for Public Lands is making a big impact with their greening campaign, busting up concrete and asphalt and replacing it with trees and greenery. They've already transformed wasteland into parks and schools into welcoming natural oases. We'll take a look. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. This is Fox 11 News In Depth. And despite our recent deluge of rains, it's important for us to always remember here in Southern California that we live in a climate that's described as a desert climate. Our natural state is hot and dry, but there are ways we can make our landscape more workable and help it serve us better in our dry climate. The Trust for Public Lands is a nonprofit, and they're making strides, big strides in that direction. Robin Mark is the LA director of the Trust for Public Land, and thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, what do you do? Let's tell everybody what the Trust is all about.
Absolutely. So Trust for Public Land is a national nonprofit organization. And our mission is really to ensure that everyone has access to green space, park space, within a 10-minute walk of their home. And we do that in many different ways. One of the ways that we're doing that across the country and in Los Angeles is to green our public school campuses. We want to make schoolyards oases, as you said, for children so they can thrive. We want to design them and support school districts to design them so there is increased shade canopy, so the schoolyards aren't as hot, where there's more permeable space so we can manage stormwater, and where kids really have opportunities, a diversity of opportunities to play and learn outside, because we know that kids, their behavior is better, their school attendance is better, their test scores are better when they have opportunities to get outside and move their bodies and really release some stress and tension.
You recently got a sizable grant or some kind of funding to be able to make a local school, an elementary school, greener. Where does this money come from? And you've just explained sort of what it is you do with that money.
Yes. So we're very fortunate to have received a grant from the California Natural Resources Agency through their Urban Greening Grant Program. This is state money. This is public money. It actually originates from a carbon tax that large companies pay into to get credits for their emissions. And so we're using that money that they've paid into to actually build some resilience on the ground.
But let's look at some video here. There's some video we have of a school in Oakland that was transformed. What did your organization do there? It's more than just planting trees, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about comprehensive renovation of these campuses. Tree planting is only one aspect of the work to cool down the campus. We're talking about removing asphalt. And again, that asphalt removal is really important because that tends to be the hottest part of the campus. And yet those are the places where we've given children to play and be outside, is these giant asphalt fields. And so, as you can see in this image, we removed some of that asphalt. We planted it with native plants. We've added vegetable gardens. We've added tree and shade canopy, and really giving kids other opportunities to spend time outside beyond, the asphalt that you need for basketball or tetherball or something.
One thing we're going to talk about a lot during this program is water. We're going to be talking about water conservation, water plans for infrastructure. That's in the next couple of segments. But what are you doing dealing with water?
Well, our goal is really to, the way that we look at every new project that we build is as a green infrastructure project. How are ways that we are able to remove some of that impermeable space, those areas where water cannot infiltrate, like asphalt? How do we remove those spaces and increase opportunities for more infiltration? adding tree canopy, removing asphalt, adding more native and drought tolerant plants to our school campuses is a way that we support stormwater management throughout the region.
And as we saw, let me stop you for a second there.
Sure.
Is this the local school right here? We have a local school that you're going to use some of that funding for. So what is it exactly you're going to do locally here? I know that grass has got to be easier to deal with than asphalt.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is actually a school in Oakland that was greened. The school in Watts that we're going to be greening, it's called 107th Street Elementary School. That campus doesn't look anything like this yet. Right now, it is just a giant field of asphalt. We're going to be adding an outdoor classroom so students can get outside and learn in the shade. Here, this is pictures of 107th. Right. We're going to be planting over 30 trees. We're going to be adding small areas where children can go and be outside for some of those social services that they receive at school. If they're working with a social worker or if they need some special tutoring attention, they have places to go. And we're also going to be creating more natural areas for children to play. Not all kids want to play basketball or tetherball at lunch and recess. Some kids want to, you know, jump on logs or play in the mulch. And there should be opportunities for all children to go outside and thrive.
Let me mention a term here, and you can sort of tell me what it means. Urban heat island. What does that mean?
Yes. So urban heat island is really the impact that our built environment creates where heat gets concentrated in areas where there is not enough tree canopy, there's not enough plant material around to cool the environment. We know that many neighborhoods, particularly in urban environments, that experience urban heat island, where the temperature can be up to 10 degrees warmer than in an area where there is adequate tree canopy and open space and park space, those areas are predominantly communities of color. And so we're really prioritizing those neighborhoods where we see increased urban heat island to create these improvements and direct these investments. So we're really targeting the communities that are most vulnerable first.
We just have a little bit of time left, but you know, I know you have other projects on the burner. I'm sure you'd love to have all the schools in the area be like this, but you're a nonprofit, and so you depend on federal grants, local grants, whatever. But what are some of the projects that you have kind of like down the pipeline?
That's a great question. We actually just completed a stormwater management project. I'm glad that you're going to be talking about stormwater. We've greened two alley networks in South Los Angeles. We're actually managing about 5 million gallons of stormwater within those two alley networks. It's going to infiltrate and replenish our ground table under the area in South Los Angeles. And we hope, like you said, to build more green schoolyards throughout LA County. We're working with both LAUSD and hope to work with the El Monte City School District as well to green many of their campuses in the coming year. We have a program called 28 by 28, where our goal is to green 28 school campuses by 2028, when the Olympics come to Los Angeles.
And
we
that'll
show the world.
And that'll be a very exciting time because you have the Olympics, you have a lot of green going on, and I just sure wish they would have done that when I went to elementary school.
Yes,
anyway, Robin Mark, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we take a look at our water situation locally, and we ask a couple of experts, are we really out of the drought, or will we ever be out of the drought? We'll be right back after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. We're talking about climate. We're talking about water. We're especially talking about the astonishing turnaround we've seen in our weather in just the past few months. We've got a couple of guests with us from local water agencies, but first a little bit of an explanation here. The Metropolitan Water District is a water wholesaler for dozens of member agencies who get their water from MWD. And the DWP brings it down to the L.A. city level as one of those agencies. Joining us now are Adele Hushkhalil, the general manager of the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, and also Anselmo Collins, the senior assistant general manager of water systems for the L.A. DWP. Good to see you both. Sounds like we have a little bit of an alphabet soup here.
Good to see you.
Thanks for being with us. You and I talked a couple of weeks ago, all three of us, and I was fascinated by this thing that you called climate whiplash. Now, there are a lot of people that are looking at our full reservoirs. They're rushing the rushing L.A. River. They think the drought is behind us. But you say, Adele, not so.
Yes. I mean, it's called climate whiplash, that basically we're seeing the extremes, the wet years and what time that we're seeing right now, and seeing hotter and drier days that we saw over the last 3 years. We were in a deficit. Our reservoirs were depleted. Our system was very dry. And we were, at the end of last year, almost running out of water for part of our service area, especially on the west side of our service area, LA, Las Virgenes, Cayugas, and others. So really, this whiplash is we need to be adapting this new normal of water management, where we can't rely on the snowpack. We can't rely on water being stored every year. It's going to be lengthy dry periods and intense wet. So what we need to do is capture that water, replenish our reservoirs, replenish our storage. So next time when we have this lengthy hot and drier days, we can provide water without interruption. So we need to adapt to it, and this is the new normal. Everybody has to adapt, and every drop that we can save and conserve is a drop we can store for tomorrow.
But Anselmo, you must hear from people all the time saying to you, the drought's over, yay, and you must say the same thing that Adele just said.
No, absolutely. Just having one really good year does not mean that we're out of the drought. And I think that's what we need to remember. We have seen this before. It happened when we had a drought that ended in 2016. It was followed by a really wet year in 2017, also 2019, and back into a drought again. So I think the most important thing for folks to remember is that this is climate change. And we're going to see this huge variability in the amount of precipitation that we get from year to year. So consequently, we need to not just plan for the future as water purveyors, but also for our customers to embrace the attitude of conservation as a way of life here in Southern California. I think that's very important. We're making some great strides, but there's still a lot of work to be done, and we need to do it all together. It's a group effort.
But gentlemen, you know, we see these images from the Sierras. We see this snowpack that's unprecedented. It's historic, right? And we even hear dire warnings that when the warmth comes, it's going to melt, and then we could have flooding in the low. Isn't that enough water?
We're in a huge deficit. We're just paying back. Lake Mead is at 25%. Lake Powell is at 28% on the Colorado River. And yesterday there was some action by the federal government to give us some bookends of some cuts that we still have to make. But also, as Anselmo said, 2019 wasn't far away. We ended up with a wet year, but followed by 3 years of extreme dryness. So I think the message is we need to continue conserving, and we need to manage that water that's coming down and put it in the reservoirs in our savings account, underground, above ground. And we need to build the infrastructure to move the water and build the infrastructure to recycle, build the infrastructure to capture stormwater and infiltrate. That's what's called climate resiliency, and that's what we're saying to everyone. Let's continue doing what we need to do in conserving. We're going to manage the system as the water is coming and put it in our reservoirs. But there's more that needs to be done because we are seeing a change, this climate whiplash. We're going to get this whiplash of hotter and drier days for years. And that's what we saw in 2019, 3 years of hotter and drier time that we almost ran out of water.
You mentioned this this federal plan to do something about the Colorado River. Maybe Anselmo, you could weigh in on this. But what I was reading on that was that it could have implications for our water, and it could shortchange us on water based on what they want to do on the Colorado River. Do you know what it is they're talking about, and how does that affect us down the road?
Sure. So it can have a huge impact on us. And Adele obviously can chime in on this because he deals with them on a regular basis. But what the federal government did, the Bureau of Reclamation announced, is that they have released a draft supplemental environmental impact study. And they're looking at two options. One option is to have reductions based on the priority system on your water rights. The other option is a straight across reduction for everybody. Well, neither one of those options really addresses the problem. And part of the problem is that we need to really be more efficient in the way that we use water. We obviously are going to always have a need for imported water, but if we can be as efficient as possible and reduce the dependency on imported water, then we will have more water available to be able to sustain during those periods of drought as well.
So some of the things that are being done, you got out in Hemet, this very large reservoir.
And
the name's escaping me for a second.
Diamond Valley Lake.
Right, exactly. Yeah. We had a camera out there, and we shot video of you putting water back into that. Tell us what that process was and why we should care about that.
So back in 2000, this lake was built by Metropolitan to serve as an emergency reservoir. It holds about 800,000 acre feet, close to about what we would need to import water in a year. That's our kind of resiliency, our emergency supply. And what kept us going during this 3 years of hot and dry days and conditions, we were able to tap into this reservoir to make up the shortage both on the State Water Project from Northern California and from Colorado River. It was down to 50%, and it was going down as we were using that water. Now, with the water coming from the Northern Sierras and seeing a lot more water, we're now filling the reservoirs, starting with Lake Castaic and others in the underground reservoirs. But finally, we're getting the water to this Diamond Valley Lake in Hemet to start filling the lake and putting water in the lake. And it's going to give us replenishing the savings account and the storage that we have. But we need to continue building the infrastructure. As we put storage, we need to make sure that storage is available to everyone. And that's what we're doing, a lot of work on infrastructure investments and building pipelines and systems to have that flexibility. But this is one example of putting water in storage so we can use it when we need it.
Okay, and we'll get to some other examples, but Adel Hashkalil and Selma Collins, stay with us. We're going to talk for another segment. And Fox 11 News will continue. And when we come back, we'll talk more with these gentlemen about our water situation, the future of water, the resources in our area. There's so much to talk about. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back now with Anselmo Collins and Adel Hashkalil, and I want to get into a couple of things here on water. One, Adel, you and I have talked about this 25-year plan that MWD has, and tell me about this plan. We have a little less time in this segment, so we need to kind of move along.
Yeah, so really what we need right now is this old way of managing water that we planned for is not working for us. So what we need right now is a plan that addresses this climate whiplash that really plans for the future. So how much storage capacity we need to build in our system? Where can we create more local water, recycling wastewater? We're building pure water Southern California. And where is the system that we need to work on to move water so we can assure our residents, our communities, our businesses, no matter what happens during this climate change and whiplash, we're able to provide water for everyone. So we're developing the plan, the programs, and also the infrastructure to allow us to invest in what we need to do to allow us to not worry about these conditions that are going to be changing every day and every year and every
years. A short answer here. Are you talking about more reservoirs? Are you talking about more plants, facilities? What are you talking about?
You're probably talking about, first thing is the more storage. We're building a storage right now up in Antelope Valley, East Kern. We're looking at underground basins to refill and clean up. We're looking at recycling water. We're doing it down at Carson, taking 150 million gallons a day of wastewater and turning it into pure water to be recharging our system, but also just building the conveyance, because we may have storage, but it's not available to everyone. So we want to build the conveyance to move water in different directions. So when we are dealing with cuts because of this climate whiplash, we can continue to support our communities.
Now, all of this costs money, right?
Oh, yeah.
You'll get it in bond issues. You'll get it in whatever. But it's the consumer that's going to end up getting it, because, Adel, when you sell Anselmo water at a higher rate, Anselmo, you charge us more money.
Yes, that's correct. Absolutely. But I think the key for us really is going to be working together as a coalition to try to maximize the number of dollars that we can bring in from other parts of the country from the federal government. There's a lot of grant money out there available right now. What we need to do is to make sure that we have the best application possible for the Southern California region to maximize the number of federal dollars that are coming in here. Because we do have some pretty great projects, but they're quite expensive. But we believe that once these projects are implemented, you know, that we're going to have a much more reliable and resilient system. Adele spoke about Pure Water SoCal. The city of LA has its own version of that called Operation Next, which is going to recycle 100% from the largest wastewater plant that the city of Los Angeles owns. By doing that, we'll be able to use that water then to recharge the groundwater basins, but also eventually for what they call direct potable reuse, which means it's taking recycled water, blending it with drinking water, and being able to serve it to our customers. So those are all expensive propositions, but let's face it, the days of having cheap water to develop are over. We have to be more creative because there is less water available, and it does cost money, but our job is to make sure that we secure that funding so that we can minimize the impact on our ratepayers.
We have a minute left, and I want to hear about ocean water because I've been to the plant in San Diego County where they desalinate water. You know, they have another one down, I think, in Huntington Beach. There's one over on Catalina Island. The technology has improved so much. You guys didn't really want to do this. Is this something that now you may revisit?
So it's part of the planning that we're looking at. It's a tool in the toolbox. What we are needing to do is find the most cost-effective solution to provide water. Right now, stormwater capture, recycling wastewater into pure water is more effective. And the concern that we have is the cost of conveyance and the impact on the environment. So yes, technology is better, but we need to plan and find where is the gaps that cannot be met except for desalting the ocean, or there's also ideas of actually creating desalting plants in inland locations, in Riverside.
But that premise was accurate. You really didn't want to do that. Now you may be revisiting that idea for the future. Quick answer.
As part of the plan, as part of this plan that we're looking at, we need to meet the gaps and may have to augment the plan by putting water somewhere. But it's not the only solution. It has to be part of the entire water resiliency plan we're looking at.
Adele Hajj-Khalil and Anselmo Collins, thank you so much. Sure appreciate seeing you. Appreciate the information. We'll stay in touch with you guys. And we'll be back with more right after this break. Don't go away. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time.